Yes, give me in-depth, damn it. I want it so in-depth that you're behind me and holding onto my hips. And
Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
And yeah, I do apologize before I get to my alcohol this evening. I do apologize. My internet just had a huge, like, massive hiccup. So your entire segment there came through garbled to the live stream. So I do apologize. But of course, this is why you double end, folks, because I'm going to get his untouched audio from the source and it won't have any of that shit in it. But unfortunately, my internet just decided to take a fat dump there during that entire speech. I barely heard any of it either, but I'm sure it was a good story.
Boom! Shake it up, now boom! Shake it up, now boom! Shake it up, boom! Shake it up, shake it up.
All right, and everybody
should it be should it be more sexy than that though?
I don't
should
think
it be like
be.
More like should it be like we'll see you. Wait a minute! Something just started to come out of me. I don't even know what that was. I don't think it. That wasn't real. That wasn't a thing.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 105 of the Epic Film Guys podcast for Thursday, the 6th of July, 2017. I hope everyone out there in podcast land is doing well. This is Epic Film Guy Nick.
This is Epic Film Guy Justin. Welcome to the show. It's going to be a great time tonight. I'm really excited about this. We don't usually, actually, it's very rare that we ever record on a Saturday. I think The only times we've ever recorded on a Saturday, Nick, are when we hang out with those guys in Perth there, like to be called the Countdown. Whenever we do stuff with them, we're kind of required to do it on a Saturday night due to their time shift being in Australia. But other than that, we really very rarely ever record on a Saturday night. There's a certain energy that you have on the weekend compared to like a Monday night when we usually record. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah, that is very, very true. You definitely have more energy on a Saturday. We're of course live streaming over on YouTube. Welcome to the live stream, everyone that is watching and listening along. And remember, you can find the live streams on YouTube the day the episode goes live. The episode live stream will go public and then you can catch all the cool things that we do that are live stream only, like thumbs of the week, things like that. Now, Justin, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, including we're going to be reviewing Baby Driver, and we're going to be talking about a new trailer in Epic Previews. We've just got a whole bunch of different stuff to pack into this week's show, so we couldn't do it without the God himself. We couldn't do without him.
Yeah, the God of podcasting. In the live stream right now, looking like he wants to take a nap after his heavy margarita he had earlier on today. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Loisauce. Loisauce, welcome to the show, man.
Check. Well, thank you for having me, and I'm not drowsy. I'm energized, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to talk about movies.
Boom.
Oh, great. I'm very glad to hear it.
Well, Loisauce, it's been a little bit since you've been on the show, I think maybe like 2 weeks. How have you been? How's the Alamo? How's hanging out with Justin in person? Dreadful, I know. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's all right, I guess. The Alamo's good. Tomorrow we are showing Jaws on the big screen, Steven Spielberg's Jaws. And of course, it is the month of Spielberg here on the Epic Film Guys podcast.
Ooh, yes.
And so we're going to be kicking it off with Jaws tomorrow, and it's going to be a movie party. And basically what that means for anyone who is not familiar with the Alamo Draft House, basically we try to make it a little bit more interactive, a little bit more fun for the audience. So we have themed props similar to what we do for the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And we just make it a little bit more interactive. You can quote your favorite lines. If it's a musical, you can sing along to all the songs in the film. And it's basically just a little bit more relaxed atmosphere than normal. So I'm really excited about that. Justin's going to be in attendance.
Don't let him in.
It's going to be rad. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't say enough how excited I am. The first time I've ever seen Jaws on the big screen was for the 40th anniversary at the Alamo Drafthouse that you now work at. And it was amazing. Sold out show. Looked beautiful. I can't wait for tomorrow. I mean, Jaws is in my top five movies of all time. And it is Spielberg month here on the Epic Film Guys podcast, as you said, which we're all very excited about. We're going to be getting to a little bit about that in a few minutes here. But I mean, I can't wait. The movie party, my family goes. My daughter loves it. My wife loves it. It's just... Jaws is so special to me, and it really is. It's perfect for 4th of July weekend.
Absolutely, and it is one of the greatest films of all time. Let's not mince words here.
I got to do it, yeah, Loisos. I got to do it just for that. We had a discussion before the show about how often I use the smattering of applause, and Loisos, you haven't even listened to last week's episode yet? Yeah, wait a year.
Jesus Christ.
I told you last week, throw on that Raw, like the crowd from Raw, man, like, you know, during the Attitude Era. I want that crowd, man. I want that.
I still have a sound clip from that. I haven't edited it in there, but I have edited a few others. Maybe we'll hear them a little bit later tonight. But gentlemen, let's get the proceedings kicked off in good fashion here. Justin. I gotta know, what are you drinking?
I'm back. Puke and red.
Let's throw it to Loisos here because we know that he had a huge margarita earlier. And we can see him in the live stream here guzzling back.
I want to know how huge this margarita was. I need a description. Like, was it as big as his head? Like, was it one of those big giant like things? Like, they're these huge pitchers?
Well, I have a rather large head, and this was about the size of my head.
Wow.
Well, each of my family had one. I was with my mom and my stepdad, and we each had a huge margarita. And it was tasty. It was strawberry. It was frozen. And I rather enjoyed it. But as of right now, I'm drinking a beer from the Star Hill Brewery in Virginia, Charlottesville, Virginia, actually. And it's called The Love. And it's a wheat beer. It's a German-style Hefeweizen.
Ooh,
and
nice.
It has a little bit of a spicy finish. It's you can taste some fruit, you know, aromas in there. And it's good, and I like it.
That sounds amazing. I do love a good Hef. I don't drink them really all that often anymore, but yeah, I love how hazy and how cloudy a Hef is.
Yeah. Nick, I remember when I first started hanging out with you, you were a huge fan of those. You're the reason why I actually started drinking those in general.
Oh yeah.
You were such a big fan.
Hefs were my go-to back in those days. I just don't get the chance to drink that many of them anymore because I just took a liking to hops. Really?
hop, and that goes right to the beer that I'm drinking right now. Nick, that is the Rico Suavens Imperial Double IPA. It is from Against the Grain Brewing Company. And I had one of their beers, actually, I saw back in December. I was looking for beers today. Now, everyone knows about The Alchemist. This is a beer company, a brewery that is extremely well known. A heady topper, okay? Nick, you've had it.
Yes, I have.
I have not.
And it is good.
When I was up in town a few weeks back, when I actually hung out with you the same night, my good buddy Josh Ruff, who did a lot of my tattoos here in the live stream, King Kong, he did my T-Rex, my Rexy, my Charles Bronson, he had another beer from The Alchemist that he brought out, and he's like, I've been saving this forever, and he gave me a taste of it, and it was like God. It was like heaven in beer form, and I just literally looked all over on Untappd. I searched all over and could not find any of their beers, and I called a local beer store, and they're like, no, man. Anyone that has that stuff down here, they went up to the actual brewery and bought it, and they brought it down here to resell it. Like, they don't ship it at all. I was so pissed because I saw someone actually had a heady topper 7 miles from me, like, the other day. And I'm like, oh, man, where can I find it? So, unfortunately, no, it's not happening. Maybe next time I come up north, I'll try to find someone that can get it or whatever. But, so I'm drinking this. It's pretty good. It tastes good, Caleb. It's fine. It's not amazing or anything like that. But the label, so those in the live stream, it's pretty awesome. It's actually a fantastic label. It says sexy beer for the sexy man. And it has this hipster look. It almost looks like the Hopester dude. He's got tattoos. He's got a tattoo that says nip above his nipple. And he's actually like rubbing his nipple. So it suits me well. I'll say that much. But Nick, I have a question for you, buddy. What do you have guzzling down your gullet this evening, young man?
Ooh, I actually decided to switch it up from an IPA, and I went on a wing and a prayer, because most of the time when I buy a Goza style beer, they're not very good, and I end up really, really regretting the purchase. But this one, actually pretty good. And if Emily's still in the live stream, she actually knows about this brewery. She's told me about it before, and they actually started selling this stuff down in our area not too long ago. This is from the Two Roads Brewing Company. This is their Persian Lime Goza. And I've had it already. I've already had one of the cans of it, and it's just got a fantastic lime flavor to it. The lime finish is tart, and then it just kind of gets that sour kind of puckered flavor on the finish, which to me is a perfect goza. And there's just like a little hint of salt in there, balances it out really, really well. It's one of the better beers of the style that I've had, and I really, really enjoyed it. So yeah, it's good, Caleb. It is. Wait a minute. Hang on, Caleb. It's 4.5% alcohol by volume.
You notice that I specifically left that out on my description because I get it, whatever. But some people do want to know that. I want to know that because when I'm buying a beer and I'm spending money, I'm like, how drunk am I going to get off this?
You know what? I wish I knew, Justin. I wish the beer that I brewed when you were here, the Triple Hopster 3.0, last night.
I wish too, man.
Yeah. I took that bad boy out of fermentation and I racked it to carbonation, and I just took a sample of it, like I always do, just a little tasting glass. And unlike the Imperial IPA I did, Justin, where it didn't finish fermenting, there was still that sweet taste to it. There was still some sugar left over. The Triple Hopster, not the case at all. So goddamn boozy. It was crazy. Like, I had a tasting glass of it, like literally 4 ounces, and I felt kind of a little woozy after I drank it because it was like, woo. But it's strong shit. So that's carbonating right now, should be ready to go in a couple of weeks. I cannot wait to crack that open on the show, and I think this will be the best version of the Triple Hopster yet.
I'm excited. I can't wait to try a version of the Triple Hopster like a year from now, or even 2 years from now. I feel like the more and more you do your craft, the more and more you get into it, you're going to get even better at it, obviously, because you're a perfectionist. Same with your cooking. The same with the podcast. You're just going to keep getting better. You're going to evolve, and that beer is going to evolve along with it, and it's going to be fantastic. We're going to be putting labels on it with the Hopster's face, selling it at conventions, the whole deal,
sweet,
ladies and gentlemen.
Sweet,
it's going to be a
Jesus
thing.
Speaking of the Hopester, if you're not a member of the Hopester's Dumpster, that is our official fan page over on Facebook. Please, please jump over there and join it. Now, gentlemen, we have so much more stuff to discuss in the show here. And as Loisos mentioned right up there at the top of the show, it is Spielberg month. The Spielberg Challenge has begun. All right. So if you want to check in your films that you're watching for Spielberg Month, do so over in the Hopester's Dumpster Facebook group. We've got a pinned post over there for you to post all your check-ins. The rules of the challenge are simple, Justin. 5 films. We put out the poll. It maxed out responses on SurveyMonkey in less than 24 hours. Huge,
awesome,
amazing
so
response
awesome
to this poll. It's amazing that people got so invested in this. But it's this simple. 5 films. You've got Jaws, Jurassic Park, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You have to watch those 5 films if you're going to take part in the challenge. You can watch however many more films you want as part of it.
As many as you want.
And we're going to have more.
You can watch literally every single Spielberg film ever made if you want to.
We're going
to
have more. We're going to have more stuff to go with the challenge as it goes forward. We're going to probably do a prize for like whoever watches the most Spielberg films, things like that. But, you know, those are the 5. So you just have to watch those 5. Let us know that you're watching them. Everybody that participates in the Spielberg Challenge is going to be entered to win an Epic Film Guys prize pack. Simple as that. So we're super, super thrilled to get into the Spielberg Challenge. We're super thrilled for everything that we've got coming up in the month of July. Again, we've got Apes, a huge Apes retrospective with Paul from The Countdown. He's going to be joining us to review War for the Planet of the Apes and talk about the first 2 films. We've got a huge, huge, huge Movie Pod Squad Network megasode coming to talk all things Christopher Nolan. So we're going to do our best 5 Christopher Nolan films, and we're going to do a Dunkirk review. So it's going to be super, super fun to get into that as well. Next week on the show, Loisos will be back. Director Brennick will be here, and Justin will be reviewing Spider-Man Homecoming. And
that is correct.
This is
going to
be a huge, huge, huge month for movies. And of course, we're going to be reviewing Baby Driver a little bit later in this show. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be awesome.
I do. It is awesome. I'm really excited, I feel like, for this month, Nick, more than any other month, just because both of our most anticipated movie of the summer, Apes, is hitting. And I'm really excited about that. I think it's getting a really huge critical response as far as positive responses are concerned. And I know, as much as you're not going to watch it and you don't give a shit, I'm pumped for Spidey's return to the big screen, because the response that I've heard from people that I know loved it. They said it's fantastic. So, I mean, I think at least as far as a good month in film for summer movie season, I feel like this is going to be it, man. June was fine. But I feel like this is going to be even better.
All right. And you know what we might as well do right now, Justin, since we've only got one film to discuss and we've just got some other stuff we've got to get to later on in the show here. Why don't we go ahead and drop a very early episode edition of Epic Previews?
In the world of Endicott, New York and Herndon, Virginia, two epic film guys dissect the latest movie trailers in a segment we like to call Epic Previews.
Only got one film to talk about in Epic Previews tonight, and that is going to be The Greatest Showman, starring Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum. And this trailer was posted over into the Hopester's dumpster not too long ago. I can't honestly remember who posted it over there, so I do apologize. But I saw this trailer twice today when I went to the movies for both of the films that I saw, and I really, really fell in love with the trailer. I really think it looks absolutely phenomenal. I think it looks very, very much larger than life, which I think is what a movie musical should do. So let's go ahead and dump the trailer in here for our friends in the live stream, and then we're going to get back to just discussing it really, really quickly. Look out, 'cause here I come.
P.T. Barnum, at your service. I'm putting together a show. And I need a star. Every one of us is special. And nobody is like anyone else. That's the point of my show. Ready? Showtime.
First time watching that trailer, Nick, and I don't care how Oscar baity it looked, I think it looks fantastic. Being a huge fan of, you know, the history of the circus, I've always been intrigued by it, considering that basically Barnum and Bailey right now is done. They're ending. They just ended this last year. I watched the whole thing on CBS Sunday Morning about it. And being a kid, the circus was so important to me. As an adult, not so much because of the animal cruelty, a lot of the things that happened behind the scenes. But, I mean, the early circus, there was something so magical and majestic about it. And I think...
How about human cruelty, Justin? Because that's what P.T. Barnum was all about.
You know, I'm talking about the movie, though.
Okay.
And animals are worth more than humans. So, there you go.
Okay.
But no, I mean, in general, for the trailer itself, it looks fantastic. I think it looks fun. I think it looks visually stunning. Not a fan at all whatsoever of the modern music used or utilized in that trailer. I really didn't like the music in general. Not my type of music, and I don't think that it fit well. But obviously, you know, mainstream audiences are going to that fit right in with the demographic for that trailer. And that's going to get them excited to see the movie this coming Christmas. So.
The dialogue in this trailer is so cringy.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't use that word very often, but it's kind of the embodiment of the word, because the dialogue in this is so just obvious and so on the nose, and it's like, oh, I just invented show business. And it's like, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to go for, I think they're trying to go for like a Baz Luhrmann Moulin Rouge type type film where it takes place in the past, but there's modern sensibilities, there's modern music, and it's self-aware in that it's using modern sensibilities in the past. But just the fact that the music is very modern, which I don't have a problem with that. The music is composed by the same people. I believe it's Pasek and Paul, the duo behind Dear Evan Hansen, which is a great Broadway musical that's on Broadway right now, and it's it won Best Musical at the Tony Awards, actually. So the song itself is not bad, but just in the context of this film, and again, I haven't, it's just based on the trailer, but you have this modern music and it does not fit at all with the imagery, with the visuals.
It doesn't fit at all. But as you just said, you get what they're going for, and it makes sense. Did I expect to hear like old school classic circus music during that trailer? No, of course not. And the music that they play during the trailer, that's what you listen to in your car, Loy Sauce. So, I mean, I'm surprised you're not excited about it because of that. But
well, I'm not excited about it because again, like the lyrics to the song as well, it's like, this is me. I'm not going to make any apologies for who I am. But in real life and what really happened, it's a very different story. So I feel like this is a little dishonest because P.T. Barnum treated people like shit. You know, he gathered all the freakiest people he could find and treated them terribly and paraded them around and saying, look at these people, laugh at these people. And if you read up on what P.T. Barnum was actually like, this is a very dishonest film. And again, this is not shooting for historical accuracy. This is trying to be a family film during the holidays, a feel-good family musical. So I get it. But at the same time, the dialogue in this is so bad. Going up to a little person and going like, I'm looking for a star and you're just what I'm looking for. And oh, I have an idea. For the circus, and it's so cheesy, dude. It's so cheesy.
To segue off of that, not before I get to Nick, because I want to know his thoughts on this. This film is portraying the American dream, and regardless of how horrible and brutal it was, the American dream has been obtained by so many of the most famous people that obtained it through brutal nature, through stepping all over people, stepping all over the little guy. And that literally is, not to get political or anything, but that is the American dream. And that's literally how we think of it in our head. All those classic people, those legends, most of them stepping over the little guy to get there. And people got hurt in the long run. But I got to hear it, Nick.
But the movie's not going to be about that.
Of course it's not. So, Nick, what did you think of the trailer overall?
I can't fucking wait for it. I don't even give a shit what anybody says about it. I think it looks fantastic.
There you go.
I will say that it is very, very... It very much pointed at kind of a modern message of, you know, accept me for who I am, accept everybody for who they are. Don't put people down because of who they are. It's definitely a very, very modern thing to include in a film like this. But I mean, they're obviously going to just kind of make this big majestic piece out of it. I don't think that they're trying to go for any kind of, as Loy Sauce said, I don't think they're going for any kind of historical realism or anything in the film. I think it looks very well shot. I think the dialogue, I agree with Loy Sauce. The dialogue is a little, come on, fine. But I still think it looks like it's going to be insanely entertaining. And yeah, the trailer really did it for me. The trailer really, really did it for me. I enjoyed it.
And Hugh Jackman has proven himself to be a very capable.
Boom, there it is.
Performer when it comes to musical theater. He's been in productions of Oklahoma. He won a Tony for The Boy from Oz, and he was great in Les Miserables. So you can always count on him to anchor a great musical theater performance. And of course, we have Zac Efron, who...
I love Zac Efron.
I love Zac Efron so much.
At least we all agree on one thing. I mean, I was saying in the live stream over there, he was getting some hate, but like, you know, my daughter growing up, when she was young, she loved High School Musical, and I got used to the guy, and I started to really like him. And I legitimately do like him, even in movies like Baywatch, where the film was almost completely unwatchable, or Loy Sauce, yes, Neighbors 2, where I absolutely hated the film. There was still something to get me through it, and usually it's him, because he's got a great comedic wit, he's a great performer, he's a great actor. I think he's yet to find that movie that really lets him stand out as an actor. Hey,
I'm saying hashtag Efron for Nightwing. It probably won't happen, but I don't give a shit. I like him, and I think he looks, you know, he's in the movie. That's a great addition as well. So, I mean, for me, of course, it's over the top, you know, feel goody Christmas time. But I don't care. Those movies are fluff, and they're meant to be that way for a reason. And audiences go to see those movies for that reason. So it is what it is.
All right. And well, we'll close up the discussion on the trailer here. Let us know what you think over in the discussion thread when this episode goes live over in the Hopester's Dumpster. Also, I want to take a moment to plug the Epic Roast line. We're rebranding FanViews. FanViews hasn't been used in forever. We really haven't promoted it in forever. So what I would like to use the line for is for people to just call us and give a shit. Just call us and roast us in the great tradition of an old school Dean Martin celebrity roaster. Something that, or if you're just pissed off at us and you want to fucking vent at us or whatever, call into that line. And if it's good enough, if I like it enough, it'll lead the show. We'll start the show with your clip. All right. So we're going to go ahead and jump into our first break. And then when we come back, gentlemen, it's time to talk Baby Driver. All right. So
we'll be right back.
What's up, guys? It's Nick from the Epic Film Guys podcast. Just wanted to drop in here and tell you, if you haven't checked out our great, great brothers down in Perth, Paul and Wayne on the Countdown movie and TV reviews, you've got to get into this show. So here's just a little taste from one of their most recent episodes of what you're missing.
Once the people become horny, they're like,
you want to have funch?
What's funch?
That's where we fuck after lunch.
And shit like that. All those, that type of shit happens in there. You have to be there for it. But it's good shit. It's good shit. There are funny jokes in there. And, at one stage, a woman's veg starts talking to her. So it's that. Okay. It's all that. Very weird. Yet kind of enjoyable.
The Countdown, the only podcast where we say the word vag and talking to her.
Subscribe to the Countdown movie and TV reviews on your podcatcher of choice, or follow them on their website at thecountdownmoviesandtv.podomatic.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thanks for sticking with us here. And thanks to all those in the live stream hanging out, having a great time on this beautiful summer night. It's a Saturday evening in July, July 1st to be exact. It's about to hit July 2nd. But we are about to sit down and talk about a movie that has hit theaters this last weekend. That is Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. And we have Loy Sauce here in attendance. He's going to tell all you no-namers that don't know anything about Baby Driver what this film is all about.
Well, Baby Driver concerns the title character, Baby, B-A-B-Y, Baby, played by Ansel Elgort, and he's a getaway driver for a bunch of bank robbers. And he has tinnitus in his ear. And to drown out the ringing in his ear, he pumps up music real loud to get himself hyped, to get himself focused while he's driving the getaway car. And he would love nothing more than to forever escape the world of crime and drive off into the sunset with his new lady love, a waitress at the local diner played by Lily James. But his boss, Kevin Spacey, is essentially blackmailing him to perform one last heist. And that's pretty much what the film is about.
All right. And you know what? Loy Sauce, you and I had the opportunity to see this movie at a screening, I feel like almost a month ago. It was definitely three and a half weeks ago in D.C. And we drove all the way there. We went through actually complete hell. I got out of work early to see this thing. And 2.5 hours getting out early from work, and we still got there, and we had to sit in the front fucking row. And it was one of the most, I literally felt like it was a painful experience for me to sit through this movie, but seeing the movie itself was extremely positive as I walked out. So we're going to throw it to Nick. Nick just saw this movie the other day. I feel like our listeners know a little bit more about how we feel about it than Nick, but we have yet to hear his opinion. So Nick, all right, buddy, let's hear it.
Go ahead. All right. So like I said, I want to open it up, and we'll go around the horn here to let everybody kind of jump in, throw in everything they loved about the movie. We'll get around to anything that anybody disliked about the movie before we get into kind of a broader discussion. Now, I'm going to just let Ron Swanson say, how I felt about this movie before I jump into anything else about it.
It's so, so beautiful.
This is my favorite fucking movie of the year. This fucking movie was a fucking amazing. I loved everything about this movie. Pretty much, I did have a couple of little things, which we'll get to a little bit later, but we'll start out right up front, and Kevin's bashing him over in the live stream, but I'm going to completely disagree. Ansel Elgort fucking sold me from the moment this fucking movie started. I absolutely loved him in this film, and I want to pitch it over to Loy Sauce.
Let me just start out by saying this is probably Edgar Wright's worst movie, and the fact that it's an absolute masterpiece is just a testament to how brilliant a filmmaker Edgar Wright is. He's brought us four of the best comedies of the decade, with Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and this is just another film to add to his filmography of near flawless entertainment. I mean, this thing fires on all cylinders. It's so many things. It's funny, it's romantic, it's action-packed, it's scary, it's suspenseful, and it's an absolute work of art. I want to say it's, if not my favorite movie of the year, absolutely in my top five. And when I exited the theater upon seeing it, I was practically jumping up and down. I was so excited to enjoy a film again. Remember when you saw a film and you enjoyed it? Do you guys remember?
That was about my experience walking out of the theater as well, Loy Sauce, because I walked out of the theater, I about wanted to fucking do like in like that old style like sitcom thing where they freeze frame at the end where you jump in the air and you got your fist in the air like and from the opening shot, that's what you get from this movie. And I mean, there's so many good things to get to here.
What did I tell you?
So
didn't I tell you that?
I want to kick it over to Justin here to throw in some good stuff here, because the bad part of this is going to have little to nothing in it. Like I have a couple caveats about the film, but that's literally it.
Huge fist pump here. And what did I say on last week's episode? I mean, if the opening to this film doesn't excite you or get you happy, then I'll be the one upset and I'll be the one that's failing at this. But I'm so glad to hear you loved that opening. I did say this on my little infographic on the page that I did post the other day on the opening day of Baby Driver. Featuring the best use of music in a movie in ages, Baby Driver is clever, hip, unique, and full of energy. The must-see movie of the summer movie season, and this is the movie. It came out of nowhere, and it's very rare that we get a original movie, original script, original idea, and a director as good as Edgar Wright behind the camera making that movie that's as entertaining as it is. I mean, it's very rare in this day and age. It's sequels, reboots, comic book movies, and while we all love a lot of those movies, this movie seriously came in out of nowhere. I did not expect to love this movie as much as I did. It did take a little while for it to kind of stew inside me, Loy Sauce. As we were walking outside the theater, he just absolutely loved this movie. And I'm holding that poster in my hands by the amazing artist Rory Kurtz that hand drew the thing. Beautiful poster. Absolutely love it so much. And I'm walking out there. And I'm like, I liked it a lot. Let me think about it some more. And it really just took a place inside me and made me realize how great this movie was. And I'm not the hugest fan of everything Edgar Wright. I mean, I do love Shaun of the Dead. It's one of my favorite movies. I think that Hot Fuzz is good. World's End, not one of my favorites. I thought that it was fine, but not a great movie. But Scott Pilgrim, definitely a really good one, a showstopper. But in this case, this movie just completely took me from start to finish. It gave me everything that I wanted out of it. Great characters, fantastic action. I mean, guys, you got to tell me, seriously, when was the last time you saw a car chase sequence as good as the car chase sequence in this movie? Seriously, almost, I would say probably 75% practical. It just was fantastic. fantastic stunt driving in this thing. It's shot beautifully, and all the characters are so fun to watch. Like, you're always wondering what they're going to do or they're going to say next. And a standout for me, and yes, I'm saying this right now, is Jamie Foxx's Bats, man. I just absolutely love that character. He's so dangerous, but yet so comedic at the same time. I was just wondering what that guy was going to do next.
Absolutely. Well, let me jump in, Justin. For those who might not be informed about the central, I don't want to say gimmick, but the central conceit of the film, Baby has tinnitus in his ear. And so, like I said, he pumps up his music. And this is a very music-driven film. You have everyone from the likes of the Beach Boys to Young MC on the soundtrack to this film. And so it's a wide variety of music. And what's interesting about the film, and in fact, what's visionary about it, is the fact that all of the action on screen is choreographed to match with the beat and the rhythm of the music. So when there's gunfire, or when Baby, you know, turns the wheel, or when he is shifting gears, car doors opening, closing, etc., even the editing, it's all to the beat of the music. So it's very, the film itself has a rhythm to it. Edgar Wright is such a visionary in this way. Like I said, he just has complete command and complete control over how he wants his film to look, how he wants it to sound. Like I said, the music is almost like a character within the film. You go to see a film some hack director, normally when the scene ends, when the scene concludes, it just cuts, goes to the next scene. Edgar Wright is not a lazy director in that way. He plans ahead of time. I'm sure he storyboards everything. And he transitions his scenes to give it a rhythm. Like I said, in one scene, Baby and Deborah are in a laundromat, and the camera focuses on red clothes tumbling in a dryer, and it's very cyclical, and you see, and then it fades into a vinyl record with a red label spinning on a turntable. And that's just such brilliant filmmaking when you're able to transition a scene like that naturally. And Edgar Wright's just kind of a genius.
Yeah, and to branch off of that, that's exactly why I loved this film so much. There's a number of other amazing visual transitions in the film like that. But going back to what you were saying about the sound, that's why, for all intents and purposes, I do sound production, I do sound design and sound editing for this show literally all the time. So to hear how perfectly all of the action in this film was choreographed specifically to the fucking music, it was legitimately a sound designer's orgasm. And every single time that the film went back to that, I loved the music. I loved the use of music in this film too. It was absolutely perfect. There's that one scene later on in the film when they're getting ready for the heist and everything gets a little out of pace, and Baby's like, no, wait, I have to restart the song, because he's got all this time to the song in his head.
Oh my God.
So perfect. It for me, that was the reason why I walked out of this movie as happy as I was. Not to say that there aren't other good things about it. So let's get those out here now. And the first one I'm going to put on the table here and whatever is John fucking Hamm. Dude knocks it out of the park in this fucking movie.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
He's so good.
I'll be quiet.
I'll
have to zip my lip. I'll have to zip my lip, Nick. I'm sorry.
He's so fucking good in this movie. He's got this kind of this badass edge to him. And you mentioned Jamie Foxx's Bats, who is also absolutely fantastic in the film. But John Hamm's a little more reserved. You kind of don't get a full sense of him right away, but then as you kind of revisit that character as he comes back into the story a little bit later on, you really get to spend more time with him. And Jesus Christ, Hamm's so good at just delivering not only dialogue, but he's so good at just delivering visually in terms of performance, the way his character is emoting. He sells every single bit of the performance in this film. He was absolutely, literally everybody in the cast knocked this out of the fucking park, but among the cast, I think Hamm was definitely among the strongest. I absolutely loved him.
I have to agree 100%. And, Nick, you already know that I was going to chime in about this. I love John Hamm. Mad Men is my favorite show. Mad Men is my favorite show of all time. Hamm hasn't done anything major since he was Don Draper and Mad Men, and that show, you know, left our view. The show's over, it's done with, and he's kind of been just floating in La La Land, and he's been doing like insurance commercials, and I'm like, come on, dude. For those that are unaware, because I've talked about it 1,000 times on the show, and if you haven't heard it enough, John Hamm was my number one for Batman when they were recasting Batman for Batman versus Superman, because he had that jawline, he's got those eyes, and he expresses them so much in this movie. That's part of that performance you're talking about, Nick, where he doesn't even have to say much. It's his just mannerisms and his eyes and the way he just turns his body to look at baby in certain scenes. And it's that whole physical presence that he has as an actor that I love so much. And it was so great for me. It was a breath of fresh air for being a huge Batman fan and a fan of Hamm in general to see him in this movie. And he's so, so, so good in it. Now, we're not going to get into deep spoilers in the film, but I mean, legit, the guy is chilling in the movie. He switches from one extreme to the other. And when he does, literally, it's going to take you by storm. He's so great in the movie.
He's a rotten son of a bitch.
He is. But I mean, you know what? He's likable, though, at the same time. That's why he's the great, you know, yin and yang, the double-edged sword.
And the great thing about
his
character in the film, too, is it's not just that he goes from one end to the other, as Justin said. Like, we won't spoil the event in the film, but when that event happens, he sells it 100%, and you actually understand where his character's coming from and why he's acting this way, which is what makes him even better. Like, you completely buy it, like absolutely 100% to a T. And like I said, that's why he's so good in the role. And I mean, the rest of the cast, I mean, we could throw Kevin Spacey in here and anybody else that anybody wants
and
to throw
John
in there.
John Bernthal.
Yeah, John Bernthal was fucking great in this movie.
Lily James is Deborah. Well,
I think we're confusing John Bernthal with Justin Esquivel because they look virtually identical.
That is a fair point.
Hey, man, if I did that crew cut, man, and I was still in shape like I used to be, maybe, possibly. I do have to say this much, though. Well, I think I'll wait till we get into our negatives, like deep into our negatives. But, I mean, why was John Bernthal only in this movie for 15 minutes? Come on, dude. He was so good in it. Bernthal's great in everything. I mean, he is the Punisher. I love Bernthal. He was the only reason that I liked The Walking Dead. I mean, he's the only reason that anyone should like The Walking Dead. Once he dies, you should have all stopped watching the show because it sucked so fucking bad. But I mean, you know, in general, he's great in the movie. The whole cast in this movie is great. I have no complaints, you know, all around about anybody in the movie. And Spacey is so good, man.
Spacey's
just
awesome.
Think about this. You know, it reminded me of this. I know that you did not watch the movie, Nick, even though I gave you the digital code. God damn it. Glengarry Glen Ross. But he plays a character in that movie who's up at a board and he's writing stuff on the board. It's you know, the 90s, man. And he's so good in that movie. He's so young. And in this movie, it just brought me back to that film with seeing him writing stuff on the board. And I'm like, damn it. Nick probably hasn't watched Glengarry Glen Ross. He should watch that movie because it's almost like a similar type of character in a way. It's different, yes, when you get deep down to it. But I'm like, just picturing him up there in a suit, you know, and writing stuff down on a board. I was like, dude, he's come so, so far from where he was in that movie, but he's such a great actor. And he hams it up in this movie, but he's so fucking good. I mean, how often does Kevin Spacey get a great role, something to chew on? He chews scenery in this thing, but he's so, so good. I mean,
well,
I feel like...
I think you're forgetting last year's hit film, Nine Lives. Justin.
So what? He played a cat. Bill Murray played fucking Garfield. I mean, how many people literally are like, oh, you're going to pay me $500,000 to voice a fucking cat or a dog or whatever fucking a rabbit in this movie where no one's going to see me? You think he gave a shit about that? Even if they put his name on the marquee or on the poster? It's Kevin fucking Spacey, dude. I mean, legit.
Well, in this film, Kevin Spacey doesn't do anything that we haven't seen him do in other movies, but... damn it if he doesn't completely nail it.
Exactly.
Person we haven't mentioned yet, Ansel Elgort, I thought was great in the film. I think you needed someone who was believable in that he had seen a lot of shit. You know, he had a little bit of danger behind his eyes, but he's also an innocent. There's so many different facets to this character. He's cool, but he's vulnerable. You know what I mean? And I think he was a great choice for this character.
I loved it. I feel like this character,
he was my favorite part of the movie in terms of actors. He was my favorite part.
The character has to be cool and collected, but he also has to be kind of like not cool at the same time. This kid doesn't really do anything. He stays at home with his foster parent. He does the jobs. He's good at doing them. He loves music. He's cool in that sense, but he's not like a badass or anything. I mean, he's a great getaway driver, but he doesn't like flaunt it. He's not like the typical badass that's sitting at the table with like a matchstick or, you know, like a toothpick in his mouth. Like, he's just a normal kid that has a problem, like a hearing impaired issue, and he loves music and he drives getaway cars because he's forced to, based upon a mistake that he made with Kevin Spacey's character. So I mean, it's the perfect representation of what this character should be. He's quiet and cool and collected, and I feel like so much of his performance is just in his mannerisms and his eyes and his movements. And that's it. You don't need so much dialogue from that character. So much. I feel like the one scene that got me the most, that literally sold me on his performance, they're talking about their next heist. And he's sitting there with the headphones on. And he's literally drumming away and he's listening to stuff almost like I do on this podcast half the time when I'm listening to Nick. And they're like, shouldn't he be listening? You know, he's not paying attention. And then Spacey just basically flows it down like, here, tell him what you just heard. And he heard the whole thing and he describes it in complete detail. That's what that character is.
All right. And well, before we jump into any of the negatives that we may have had about the film, does anyone else have anything else that they want to throw into the positive aspects? We've heard a lot of the performances. Justin mentioned all of the amazing driving work, which I know we're going to discuss even further in detail. And of course, we've talked about the music. Does anyone else have anything they want to add to the positive aspects of the film?
Well, my positive is also going to get into the negatives a little bit.
All right. Well, you know what? You be that bridge, Loisas. You be that bridge for us.
Sure. I thought that the romance in the film was very fairy tale like. And I mean that as both a positive and a negative, because the chemistry between Ansel Elgort and Lily James, I thought was there. You know, I could feel it. And it felt, this is going to sound weird me saying this, but I thought it was kind of sexy because they were very, you could tell they were very passionate about each other, and the way that they looked at each other and in certain scenes, I thought it was, you know, you could feel the heat coming out from the screen. However, I do think the romance was so simplistic, and this is for all intents and purposes a fable, but I felt that the romance was almost like Disney-like, where it felt kind of like a young adult novel. It didn't really feel like real life. And I know that that's not what the film is trying to convey. The film is, and I've heard Edgar Wright describe it as such, a fable. But I did feel like the romance was very simplistic, and I can see people being turned off by that. It didn't turn me off to the film, but I could see that being a major downfall for some people.
I actually want to jump right on that, Loisas, because it was a little bit of a point of contention with the romance, but it didn't detract enough from my overall viewing to like ruin it or anything. But I'll agree with you. It did seem a little bit fairy tale like, and it was a little bit, it almost kind of stretched the bounds of believability for me. Like, I was so hokey, invested. Yeah. It was very hokey. You're exactly right about that, because like they meet each other and they have the great, amazing scene in the laundromat. Like, the chemistry between these characters is absolutely on point. You're 100% correct about that. And it's just, I feel like it was a little bit too brisk of a move from, okay, you know, they're these two characters who have just met and, you know, they're really into each other and et cetera, to all of a sudden they're running away together and doing all this stuff. You know, she's agreeing to run away with him. And I mean, the impetuousness of young love, yada, yada, yada. You can throw all that different stuff in there. But yeah, I just, for me, I think as much as it invested in all the other aspects of this film, even though none of the characters got like, except for Baby himself, none of the other characters got like a ton of screen time or a ton of character work, but they got enough to really sell them. And I think Deborah did too, but the relationship itself, I think, was probably, if I had to think one thing in this film that was lacking, that's it.
I got to say this much, jumping into my negatives, it is also a positive, but at the same time, I get where they're going for. In this movie, I feel like Edgar Wright knows his classic cinema so much, and a lot of that is in this script. A lot of it is in this in these characters. But the first time that Baby meets her in the diner, their first back and forth is very, very formulaic. It just feels like you said, Loy Sauce, it's very fantasy-like in the sense that it feels like an old 70s movie. It feels like that kind of dialogue that you'd get in an old movie like that, or a 60s movie, when a girl would walk in the door, she's dancing around, she's getting into work with her work outfit, and then the male character kind of latches onto her visually, and then they connect, and they have a discussion. And then their dialogue is so just, it feels like that, but at the same time, I like that because it feels like those old movies and it brings me into their relationship. It brings me into their connection. Right. So and it's a double-edged sword because I like it at the same time as I'm like, oh man, they're going to do that. So I really am going to have a hard time, guys. Nick, Brian, I'm going to have a hard time coming up with anything bad about this movie that I disliked.
There's nothing about this film that I outright like completely disliked to where it detracted from my overall experience with and the film itself. Like I was in love with this movie literally from like the first 5 minutes.
So Nick, I have to ask you, while we're on the spot here, we're in the live stream, we're recording it, we just did our top five of the year up until this point last week, is this film gonna fit into your top
five? Number one, 100%.
Oh, absolutely. Number one,
absolutely.
See, you know how good this feels, Loy Sauce? You know how good this feels when you and I are both wrong about this? I have to go out on a limb here because Nick and I used to talk about movies as soon as we saw them. We would text each other before the podcast days. And I asked him this morning, I said, come on, you know, give me something. Give me a hint. Did you hate this thing? Because I was ready to come in here and be like, and hear Nick be like, he didn't love it. But I had hopes that he would because this felt like out of any movie that I've seen the past 6 months that Nick hadn't seen before I saw it, this would be the one that he liked. And I can't tell you enough, Nick, I am so happy and satisfied that this movie satisfied you in the way that it did. I can't tell you enough, man.
Yeah, I mean, this thing was – we'll branch into the discussion here because I don't think any of the rest of us have any negatives to add to anything. If we do, we can add them later. But it's – for me, from that opening scene – and the opening scene of this film is, you know, they pull up and, you know, the crew gets out to go perform the heist. And then, like, it immediately kind of took me to all those moments. And everybody has these moments where they hear that song that they love and it pops on the radio. And they just sit there and they start singing along and they're tapping on the roof and they're tapping on the door and they're rapping along on the dashboard, singing along with it. And, like, they're so invested in it. They're so in love with it. It immediately sets the tone for this film. And for me, it immediately, like, I was worried about this film. Like, it's called Baby Driver. I still hate that fucking title, but I mean, I think it's fine. I understand.
It's from
why.
The Simon and Garfunkel song.
Shut the fuck up. I love, I still absolutely love the film. Like, I get, you know, kind of where they were going with, and I don't, it doesn't bother me anymore because that was like really the only hang up I had going into it. I still thought the trailers looked interesting enough. They didn't really 100% pique my interest, but they were enough to put my ass in the seat, you know? And as soon as that scene happened, that scene immediately sells what this movie is trying to sell. So if you don't buy it from that opening where they're going to, as Loy Sauce was talking about earlier, they're going to synchronize a lot of the action with the sound in the film, the sound effects with the music. If you can't buy that from that opening, you're not going to have as good of a time as I did. For me, I bought that literally immediately, right away, and I was just invested in it from the get-go. And like I said, it's probably because I do all this sound work on the podcast, it probably does lean a little bit toward that. It probably does give me a little bit of that because it's so amazing to hear such amazing sound production work, and everything else about the film was solid as well. It's one of the most entertaining experiences I've had in the theater in quite a while. And this year, as in terms of a year for films, like when we did that top five last week, I was struggling a bit to put that list together. Like I had to put films on it that I was very mixed on, like Kong Skull Island was on my list and shit, which I enjoyed overall, but I still had a lot of issues with. This is one of few films this year where I have just fucking been, I was blown away by how good it was, how absolutely wonderful I thought it was.
That's fantastic. So guys, as we're getting in depth about Baby Driver, but Loy Sauce, I feel like I'm going to throw it to you real quick before we get to our final, Nick's final thoughts, my final thoughts, because, you know, I have not, I will be honest with you. I've seen a lot of movies with Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce. Yes, his name is Loy Sauce. His name is Loy Sauce.
I need to isolate this as its own sound drop.
And I had not seen you this excited, this happy with the glisten in your eye. Yes, that was a fucking thing, dude. I saw it and you're holding the poster walking downtown DC and it was a special feeling regardless because we went to an awesome screening in downtown DC. This is right in the middle and right next to the Verizon Center. We're walking out. We just saw this movie that no one else had seen and you were like, that was the fucking most amazing thing ever. You know, like you really, really love this movie. And I've seen a lot of movies with you. It was like either it was really good or blah, 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 or you hated it like Apocalypse, you know, which we never want to talk about again. Or, you know, Suicide Squad that you gave a 10 out of 10 rating. You said it was the best movie of the year. Still, even not even
you are a filthy liar.
OK, well, Power Rangers, you gave a 9 out of 10. So
I'm pretty sure he gave that
another lie.
Oh, that's right. Actually, you said if there could be 100 out of 10, you would give it for Power Rangers. But I'm going to give it to you for your final thoughts on this movie, because seriously, like I said, I felt something in you as we left that theater that made me like it even more.
Well, you're right, Justin. I mean, it's rare when I walk out of a film and feel this giddy. I have to say that anyone who's listening to this podcast right now, I implore you to go see Baby Driver in theater. Support original film. This is a film, it's a wide release. It's not a blockbuster, but this is a film that has an original concept with comedy, with action, with romance, everything you can want in a film. And it appeals to what cinema is supposed to do, and that is to entertain. But not only does it entertain, there's so much craft that goes into this film. And that's just, again, a testament to Edgar Wright and how brilliant he is as a director. I think he's a visionary. I think he's an auteur. And this film is just another impressive addition to his pantheon of already brilliant masterpieces, in my opinion. I think Baby Driver's a masterpiece. If I were to give it a rating, Justin, I would absolutely give Baby Driver a 9 out of 10. I do think it's Edgar Wright's worst movie, but again, to say worst is a misnomer because all of Edgar Wright's films have been masterful, impressive, and this is no exception. I feel like if you do not go see Baby Driver, you're not only letting down yourself, you're not only letting it down us Epic Film Guys, you're letting down cinema.
I'm doing the smattering again, Loisas. I don't care. That was worth it.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump right off of what Loisas just said. And, you know, thanks for those awesome words there, Loisas. I really ended up loving this movie. It is one of the standouts of the summer. I put it on my top 5 of the year so far for the year. Last episode, last week, and that stands. It may even rise higher. Who knows? I do want to see it again this week in my 4-day weekend for July 4th. I'm hoping to get a chance to watch it again. Unfortunately, my local Alamo that Brian helps run is not showing it on their big format theater. No, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. They're showing Transformers The Last Stand, and I'm going to keep fucking calling it that because that's what it should be called. The Last Stand with that franchise, and it's over with. Even though I didn't hate it as much as Nick and Epic Film Guy Kevin Sampson. I mean, Kevin Sampson from Picture Lock said, it is what it is. This movie just really is what summer movies are all about. And yes, Edgar Wright is a visionary. He's fantastic. He is one of the best directors that is working in Hollywood right now. Marvel, you fucked up. I'm going to keep throwing it at your face. You missed out on Ant-Man. What his Ant-Man would have been, should have been, and could have been, would have been way better than what we got. So, Edgar Wright, love you. This movie's fantastic. I'm going to give Baby Driver a 9 out of 10 raving. You should see this movie. Out of any movie this summer, this is the movie to go see.
Yeah, and I'm going to 100% agree with that. This is a 100% recommendation from me and from the Epic Film Guys podcast as a whole, I would say. I mean, this movie just, Ansel Elgort, and I can't believe that Kevin thinks he's the weakest aspect of the film. I still for my money, I just think he has all those amazing scenes with his adopted father, who, you know, he does all the sign language communication with, which was just amazing. So what Edgar Wright does in these scenes, and he does it all through the film, really, but he just allows the music and he just allows the visuals to convey the story and to convey the characters and the emotional depth that they're going through. And I think that that's absolutely fantastic. Whenever a director can really sink their teeth into the visual aspect of the medium that they're working in and give you something incredibly unique. And it's a fantastic film, and I cannot say that enough. And I mean, I've developed something of a reputation, I would say, amongst our peers and amongst contrarian. Our listeners and everything, of having hashtag pretty extreme contrarian. Opinions. And as much as I go the other way sometimes in this film, I go 100% to the positive. I mean, it is that good, and it is that entertaining, and it is that enjoyable. See this fucking movie. You will not be disappointed.
And that is it, ladies and gentlemen, for our Baby Driver review. Thanks for everyone that stuck with us here on the show and all those live streamers right there hanging out with us right now. Movie Pod Squad, what's up? We all highly recommend seeing Edgar Wright's Baby Driver in theaters. This is the movie you take a chance to see in theaters this summer. Please do this. You will not regret it. You're going to have fun. You're going to be entertained. There's great action, great comedy, great love story, great characters. It's a colorful film. It is a perfect summer film. This is it. Go see Baby Driver in theaters this summer. But until then, we're going to be taking a few moments as a quick break on the show. And we'll be right back.
A man couldn't ask for a better wife than you've been. I'm responsible for it. I done locked myself into a pattern trying to take care of you all that I forgot about myself.
What the hell was I there for? That was my job, not somebody else.
Rose, listen to me. I done tried all my life to live decent, to live a clean, hard, useful life. I try to be a good husband to you in every way I know how. Maybe I come into the world backwards. I don't know, but you're born with two strikes on you before you come to the plate. You got to guard it closely, always looking for the curveball on the inside corner. You can't afford a call strike. You can't let nothing get past you. If you're going down, you're going down swinging. Everything lined up against you. What you gonna do? I fooled them, Rose. I bunted. When I found you and Corey in a halfway decent job, I was safe. Couldn't nothing touch me. I wasn't going to strike out no more. I wasn't going back to the penitentiary. I wasn't going to lie in the street with a bottle of wine. I was safe. I had me a family, a job. I wasn't going to get that last strike. I was standing on first base waiting for one of them boys to knock me in to bring me home. I saw the gal. She firmed up my backbone. I got to thinking that if I tried, maybe I could steal second. You understand what I'm saying?
Me tight. I just wanted you to steal grabbed second. Me and
I stood on first base for 18 years, and I thought, well, goddammit, go on for
it. We ain't talking about baseball. We're talking about you going off and laying up with another woman and bringing it home to me. That's what we're talking about. We're
Rose,
not talking about no baseball.
You're not listening to me. I'm trying to explain it to you the best way I know how. It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I've been right here with you, Troy. I got a life, too. I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot as you. Don't you think I ever wanted other things? Don't you think I had dreams and hopes? What about my life? What about me? Don't you think I ever crossed my mind to want to know other men that I wanted to lay up somewhere and forget about my responsibilities? That I wanted someone to make me laugh so I could feel good. You're not the only one who's got wants and needs, but I held on to you, Troy. I took all my feelings, my wants and needs and dreams, and I buried them inside you. I planted a seed and watched and prayed over. I planted myself inside you and waited to bloom. It didn't take me no 18 years to realize the soil was hard and rocky and it wasn't never gonna bloom. But I held on to you, Troy. I held you tighter. You was my husband. I owed you everything I had, every part of me I could find to give you. And upstairs in that bedroom with the darkness falling in on me, I gave everything I had to try and erase the doubt that you wasn't the finest man in the world, and wherever you was going, I was gonna be there with you because you was my husband. Because that's the only way I was going to survive as your wife. You're always talking about what you give and what you don't have to give. But you take too, Troy. You take and don't even know nobody's giving.
You say I take and don't give.
Troy,
you hurt
me.
I take and don't
Troy,
give.
You're hurting my arm.
I don't
like,
give
go.
You everything I got. Don't you tell that lie
Troy.
On me. Don't you tell that lie
Troy.
On me.
Troy, you're hurting me.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you very much for sticking with us here and listening to the Epic Film Guys podcast. You guys are amazing, and we absolutely love you.
All you right. rule.
Yeah. All right. Now, Justin, before we roll out on the show, and we've really tapped out everything that we had to talk about tonight pretty early, so go us, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, just a few plugs here before we roll out on the show. First of all, as Loisos said, check him out over on the George and Tony show. Our little Loisos spreading his wings.
He gets out there. He gets around. I mean, he legit does get around.
He gets around.
So, I mean.
Yes. So it's going to be out the, I believe, July 17th. Actually, I'm looking at the text that George Hanna of the George and Tony Entertainment Show has sent me, and it's going to be out July 17th. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Shout out to George from the George and Tony Entertainment Show for having me on once again on the podcast. I very much appreciate it. It's always a good time. And I'm going to be giving my midterm report, I guess, report card of the films that have come out so far this year, my favorites and least favorites. So definitely look forward to that.
All right. And Justin, I know both you and I have 105 episodes in here, we've basically become pod whores. We show up on every show that wants us pretty much whenever we've got the time, whenever we've got the opportunity.
I'll do anyone. I'll do any podcast. I'll do you good.
Well, yeah, we'll stick it to that first one. I'll do everything. I'll do everyone.
Have me on. I'll do you real good.
So yeah, Justin, I'll give you a good job. Any guest appearances that you have recorded recently that you wanted to drop in here, let people know some of the other great places and the other great shows that you've been showing up on.
I don't know. Nothing. I've been on this show, nothing special, actually.
All right. And well, for my part, Super Movie Brother Dave is over in our live stream chat right now. You can catch me and John from the So in Technicolor podcast on their anniversary show coming up, where we did this really fun drinking game where we talked about movies that we love that everyone else hates. And if you also, you know, if you hated the movie and other people loved it, they had to drink. And then they had to explain why they were a defender of it. So please check that out. And I believe it's actually already live now. Wes is over in the live stream. He'll have to correct me. But over on the Rabbit Ears podcast, myself and Justin from Sorry Married to Movie Geek actually joined Ashley over there to talk about Lost. And we were shocked and appalled that Ashley hated Lost. Like we were just floored, because we didn't know going in, and we thought we were going on the show to basically do a big Lost circle jerk, and kind of got thrown off guard with that. But please check that out. As soon as that is live, I will go ahead and make a link available for that as well. And in the meantime, guys, I just want to go ahead and give a quick shout out to these people that gave us iTunes reviews. These were all back in the month of May.
Throw them out, man.
All right. So from Cool Breeze 23 said, these guys are fantastic, knowledgeable, engaging, and funny, and they also really reach out to their listeners on social media. Great show. Give it a listen. Thank you very much. We will definitely continue to do that. Justin and I are both very, very active on social media, especially in that Hobster's Dumpster, our new Facebook fan group. Please jump in there, because there's a lot of exclusive stuff in there that you can't get.
Hashtag the Hobster's Dumpster. What the fuck?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Distorted again. That means move away from the fucking mic, Justin.
I'm sorry, dude. That just happened again.
Jesus.
I think he ran in and right out really quick.
All right. And from Fuzzy D from the Who Spiked the Puns podcast, speaking of Who Spiked the Puns, what did we say the Who Spiked the Puns topic needs to be? Oh, Boss Baby Driver. That's right. Boss Baby Driver. That's a future episode of Who Spiked the Puns. They've got to do it now because we told them. With super skills of critical cinematic analysis, you want to believe that these guys were bitten by some sort of radioactive theatrical spider. Well, it's true. All of it. just watch out for the Hopester. He doesn't play well with others. All right. And from John DeQuilla, a very, very good friend of mine that I went to college with back in my Clarion days, just said very simply, the GOAT of podcasts, the greatest of all time. So thank you very, very much. And what we're going to roll out on the show here. And first things first, I want to give a shout out to our absolutely amazing sponsors, starting with the Netflix and Swill podcast, now a member of our brand new Podfix network. Yes, the Movie Pod Squad Network is becoming the Podfix Network at some point in the future. And I don't know when I'm supposed to talk about that or if or whatever. I don't give a fuck. I'm doing it.
Nick, you talk about whatever the fuck you want.
That's
man.
Right.
It's a show. What I want.
Hashtag I do what I want. But yeah, Netflix and Swill is already a part of that new network, as is the Shaken Not Nerd podcast, and another amazing show out of Australia. Duty and the guys, just absolutely fucking great. We love both of those shows. But like I said, our great, great sponsors, Dan and Caleb from Netflix and Swill, also up for Best Podcast in Pittsburgh right now. And I actually shared that link over on the Epic Film Guys Facebook page. Go vote. Please go and vote for Netflix and Swill for the Best Podcast in Pittsburgh. Show some love for those guys, and I think that'll definitely help to get those guys exposure.
I did. I voted for them earlier. Yeah, so yeah. Go show some love. Just absolutely. Takes less than a minute.
All right, and of course, Destruction in Human Form, Mr. Jared Taylor, we absolutely love you. For Flash or The Running Man, as Caleb told me to call him, Mr. Scott LaVar, thank you very, very much. Our resident kaiju expert, Mr. Robert Moreno, thank you very, very much. Emily from The Story Behind with her little baby Cameron rocking that Epic Film Guys onesie, thank you very, very much. And Justin, last but most certainly not least, another Justin. Mr. Chrissy himself, the lover of all things fudge.
Shock Top.
Shock Top himself, Justin Winters from Sorry Media Movie Geek. Thank you, everybody. Thank you out there for sponsoring the show and continuing to let us do what we love to do. Justin, what do we got rolling up on the show next week? You're going to see a certain thwipped hero guy in tights.
Yeah, Spidey's making his way back onto the big screen. And from what I've heard, it's his best entry yet. We'll see. We'll be talking about it next week on the podcast. That's right. I'm honestly really excited for it, Nick. It's hard for me to kind of hold back the excitement. I mean, yes, I know Spidey's overdone. Yes, we've seen a lot of his films. But just feeling that energy in the room, it's like, oh, man, Spidey's coming back. And Michael Keaton is the villain with the Vulture. We'll see. I'm excited.
Yeah, let me tell you what kind of energy I feel about Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's the kind that won't let you be hard. You just sit there like, what? Why isn't it getting hard?
Nope.
Oh, it's Spider-Man. But I get it, though. We'll be talking about that next week. Director Brennick from Netflix and Swole will be on with Lola Loy Sauce to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. So be prepared for that. And no, the Fist yourself, goddamn sound drop, will not be in it. Dan, record something Spider-Man related that's just as bad or awesome, but yes.
Oh, my Lord. All right. So, yeah, it's absolutely going to be a fantastic time. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we've got Paul coming on for an Apes retrospective and Super Movie Pod Squad or a Podfix Network Megasode talking about all things Christopher Nolan and reviewing Dunkirk, which is absolutely amazing. So please, please, please. I lost my scene there. Loy Sauce, talk.
What?
What, Lorraine?
What, Lorraine? What, Lorraine?
What was it, George Bird watching? What, Lorraine? What?
If I could play any role in a movie, it'd be George McFly.
It's always a huge, huge pleasure when you come out and join us for the show, Loy Sauce. So first and foremost, let me thank you for being here and helping us talk all things Baby Driver. And see, I already knew that you two were going to review the film very positively. You guys didn't know what my reaction was, so it's always great to come in here and, you know, just foist, like basically just do a huge circle jerk around a movie and spooge all over it, which is pretty much what we did in the review. So thank you for being here, Loy Sauce.
Oh, well, you know, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure as always. a B-side on Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island is coming very soon.
Well also, let our listeners know, Loisauce, what other big movie we're doing this summer for a B-side? A movie you're showing at Alamo Drafthouse in August.
Oh, yes. Well, it's the 30th anniversary of everyone's favorite film, Masters of the Universe, starring Dolph Lundgren, which is, of course...
Dude, Frank Langella in that movie is one of the best villains of the 80s. Go fuck yourself. His Skeletor is amazing.
Oh, my God.
We're showing it at Alamo Draft House,
right?
Sweet
baby Jesus.
There's going to be a B-side in connection to that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Well, look forward to B-side coming up soon on the show. Thank you very, very much, everybody who came out to listen and watch us on the live stream. And thank you very much, everybody, for listening. We love you guys. This is why we continue to do the things that we do. You guys are awesome. We're going to get the Hopester lined up and give you guys all drunken blowies behind the Ned Devine's bar. Show up at the Hopester's dumpster at about 3 o'clock in the morning with a half eaten double cheese, and that's your ticket in, man. That is your ticket in.
Maybe even a quarter of Mr. Boston left. At least a quarter. Yeah, it's enough to get him happy. So,
all right. But yeah, thank you very, very much, everybody, for listening. Thank you guys. Every single person out there who loves and supports this show, we love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So I am Epic Film Guy, Nick.
And I am Epic Film. Epic, epic, epic film. Epic, epic, epic film. Guy Justin. Where's Loisauce? Did he die? He's dead.
And I'm Loisauce.
And he's...
And we...
And he's...
And we will see you at the movies.
The Epic Film Guys are a proud member of the Movie Pod Squad Network. Check out more amazing shows like Now in Technicolor, Who Spiked the Puns, and Cult 45 at moviepodsquad.com.